Please do be seated. With the Ash Wednesday service just about upon us this week, featuring the preacher of Ross Royden, we're reminded that Lent is just about on us. And it's as if the readings from this morning on the Transfiguration give us a final burst of light, which we'll encounter again at Easter. And in between, we have the period of relative darkness and shade of Lent that we're just about to enter into. And it's a reminder of the rhythm of our Christian lives, that there are times of brightness and times of, less brightness, and times when, perhaps we go through darker times. But we see in the Transfiguration the light of the glory of Christ. And in the Transfiguration readings, in all of the Synoptic Gospels, but in Mark, we see lots of echoes of the Old Testament. Jesus takes Peter, James and John and goes up the mountain where they meet with a couple of other mountain men, Elijah and Moses. And God has met with Moses and Elijah on the mountain and speaks out of a cloud. And we know that God speaks on mountains and he speaks out of clouds. And in Jesus' baptism, God speaks out of a cloud. If you remember, Elijah ends up on a mountain. They've just had the bonfire contest with the prophets of Baal, where he's just won that with God. And then they set out to get him, so he runs away and he hides. And he goes into a cave and God says, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "Well, there's only me and there's lots of them." And God says, "No, there's a lot of us. Come up." And Elijah meets with God on the mountain. Do you remember, it's not in the earthquake, not in the fire, but it's where he hears that still small voice. So Elijah's got lots of experience of the mountain. Moses too goes up the mountain, and Elijah's at Horeb, Moses at Sinai, goes up the mountain. That's where God gives him the tablets of the commandments, but also gives him the instructions about the sanctuary and worship. And Moses is up there too. Moses meets with God on a mountain, and God speaks to him after 6 days in a cloud. And it's not surprising, therefore, that Mark points out, actually, this is 6 days after Peter's proclamation of Christ as the Messiah that the Transfiguration happened. So it's not as if this is a revelation to the disciples of who Jesus is. It's, if anything, it's a confirmation of, as James Williams puts it, "Yeah, you got it right. Jesus is the Messiah." But with both Elijah and with Moses, there's that sense of unfinished business. With Moses, he leads the people of Israel in the wilderness, but he doesn't lead them into the promised land. That's Joshua, it's left to somebody else. There's been a lot of talk in the press over the last few weeks about how the church should be perhaps adopting some better business practices and management practices. And Lord Green has interestingly written a report on that. but if you look at our Old Testament reading, it's not exactly the best handover process that you'll ever see in management history. You've got when Elijah's up the mountain, God gives him some instructions, one of which is to go and anoint Elisha. So Elijah has anointed Elisha. We've got Elisha then following Elijah. And it's almost as if Elijah's going like this. He says, "Well, I'm going to Bethel. You stop here. I'm going to Jordan. You stop here." And Elijah keeps following on. And then he receives the mantle from Elijah. But that's it. He's just about to start asking him all those questions, and all of a sudden it's whoosh. It's like you've gone into a cloud. And Jesus himself will go into a cloud. So there's unfinished business. And so you can imagine, perhaps the disciples, when they're saying, well, you know, it's good for us to be here. Shall we build some booths, some places for us to be? That they're mindful of the unfinished business with Moses, mindful of the unfinished business of Elijah, and are beginning to think, now we've just worked out who Christ is. This isn't one of those times when all of a sudden there's more unfinished business and he gets whipped away. Perhaps that's one of the reasons why they wanted to build something that was stable, something that would, if you like, keep them there. But as we know, God's glory is elusive and it isn't capturable in that sense. And so we see that as Jesus meets with Moses and Elijah, that sense of God confirming that yes, he does speak through the law and the prophets. We see that as Moses and Elijah disappear in that sense, that it's not a question of looking back, it's a question of looking forward. And it's a Jesus who stays, a Jesus who remains, a Jesus who will finish the business, as it were, that we see in that image of the Transfiguration. And there is a temptation sometimes when we look at the Transfiguration to make all of those linkages with the Old Testament and the Old Covenant, which are really, really important and really, really significant. And to think, we've now got the Transfiguration. We understand the Transfiguration, we can kind of tick that off. And it becomes, in that sense, an intellectual exercise. We rationalise it and we can try and look at it and think, why does it happen? Oh yes, that's why it happens. It's a linkage with the old to the new and all of this symbolic representation that's taking place. But in some sense, that's to miss the real point of what was going on with the Transfiguration, because for the disciples, while they were there, there were moments of divine encounter with God, moments of divine revelation, and moments of divine faith. And that's what God calls each one of us to our own moments of divine revelation, to our own moments of divine encounter, and to our own moments of faith. And there will be those times when it's up and it's down, and there'll be those times when we feel it's very difficult to hear God or to see God and to reflect the glory of God. And partly that's because that's how life is. But it's also, we're very good at rationalising our own experiences, at ticking the box, rather than taking a step back and appreciating God and just seeing God at work in our lives and in others as we too are transfigured. There's a phrase in the collect which Jane read to us, which talks about from glory to glory. As we are transfigured ourselves from glory to glory. And that's what the Transfiguration is about. It's about how we too can be transfigured, how we too can be changed from glory into glory. Glory, which is that strange presence and reflection of the light and the presence of God in our lives and in the lives of those around us. As we acknowledge and see and take time out to reflect how God does touch our lives, how God does speak directly and through others, to look at the God incidences that happen in our lives. Perhaps, like Peter, James and John and others before, we need just to take ourselves out a little, to take ourselves up a mountain, to take ourselves away to be quiet for a few minutes or whatever, to give God the chance to speak, perhaps more than we feel that he does at the moment. But God does speak. God does intervene. God gives each one of us those moments of divine revelation, moments of divine encounter, moments of faith where things make sense, as well as the period that we enter into Lent, where it is a bit darker. And God calls us to be transfigured, to be changed from glory into glory, to reflect his presence, so that his glory is known more in the world. So his transfiguring presence, which remains with us because he finished the business at Easter to which we look, is known to the people that we live with, the people in our society, and is known more and more in our own lives. Amen.